Alonso was second and Lewis Hamilton third. BBC News.
You're listening to BBC Radio 4. Now the concluding part of our classic serial, the epic story of a man who risks everything to find his true path.
Episode 2 of The Aeneid by Virgil. Dramatised for radio by Hattie Naylor. With Richard Harrington as Aeneas, Fiona Shaw as the Sibyl, and Daniel Morden as the storyteller.
Dido, great queen of Carthage, is dead. Her life taken by her own hand with the sword of her lover, Aeneas. Trojan Aeneas, who is sailing away, oblivious to her death for the loss of him. He is sailing away to Hesperia, instructed by Jove himself to found a new realm, a new race. For 9 days he holds the Trojan fleet on course, ploughing the waves blown dark by the north wind. Then the wind shifts and comes roaring out of the west. Skimming over the white caps, they head into port on Sicilian soil. Acestes, born of a Trojan mother and the sea god Crinisus, is watching from the fields and is amazed to see his own kin.
Aeneas! It is you, isn't it? Oh, you don't recognize me.
I'm not certain.
Well, you were only a lad when we last met. You are so like your father.
You knew my father?
Well, certainly I knew him. I'm from Troy.
Are you Acestes?
Yes. It's not so different after all. Yes. You said, knew my father. Is he, not with you?
He died after we left Troy. Peacefully, quietly. With both myself and his grandson, my boy, Ascanius, by his side. It's a year since we committed his bones to Earth.
Oh, my dear friend. So much hardship to lose your homeland and your father. Such loss. Such terrible loss.
Anchises, father of Aeneas, Venus's lover, marked by time. Anchises, who wanders next to the river, in the house of the dead.
Let us hold funeral games. To remember you a good and noble father. We'll have archery, wrestling, swordsmanship, racing.
But even as they plan their games, targets laid and sandpits dug, the Trojan women are complaining.
This isn't Hesperia.
No.
Why are we stopping here?
For games. They want games.
Games?
Funeral games for the father of the captain.
He shattered a queen's heart. And now we delay for games.
He doesn't even think of her.
Are we even near Hesperia?
I don't know.
Oh, I'm so tired of the sea, of sailing.
The funeral games begin. Javelins are thrown, arrows drawn, targets shot, wine drunk. Anchises is honored and remembered with revelry.
Do you have a complaint?
Yes. We cannot contemplate another journey.
My father is frail and old. My mother is sick. These are all the people I have.
It is the fates that drive me on.
Can I not ask, so we are certain of their direction?
We are so very tired, Aeneas.
My father can't travel anymore, Captain. Please don't ask this of us.
Let the old and weak of us stay here. But Acestes is our guardian. We are told there's more fighting to come, more death ahead. What use will we be to you then?
I can't live through such hardship again. I can't live through another tree.
Watching the women cry for their homeland and ache for safety, Aeneas wrestles the anguish in his heart. Should he forget his fate and settle in Sicily, or head for Italian shores? At night, as he lies restless in sleep's cradle, his father's ghost walks into his dreaming.
My son, dearer to me than life, my dear son, so pressed by the fate of Troy. Let the old, frail, and unwilling stay here on Sicilian shores. Choose your elite troops, your bravest hearts, and sail them on to Italy. Land at Cumae, and there go to the Sibyl's cave. Let her lead you into the depths of the underworld. Go down to the House of Death and meet me there. Learn what is to come, what you will begin on Italian soil, and the city that will make you her own. But now, farewell. Cruel dawn breaks in the east. One last thing. Easy it is to descend, but hard to return. Take with you the golden bough hidden in Cumae's glade. This gift for Proserpina ensures your safe return.
With that, he vanishes into thin air, a wisp of smoke. So it is agreed. Those that elect to stay disembark, all those who feel no need for glory. No more wavering now. Buoyant spirits seize Aeneas' heart.
All on board! Step the masts! Man the sails!
Yes, Captain!
And as one, they make the sheets fast and let out canvas, bellying now to port, now to starboard.
Westward! Take us westward!
Yes, Captain!
At Cumae, the sailors leap to land, strike seeds of fire buried in veins of flint, find water, hunt and eat and rest. But devout Aeneas searches only for the golden bough, begs for signs, prays for help. When two white doves play above his head, they lead, he follows. And there in the deep dank wood, the golden tree, the bough he plucks. And now he makes his way to the Sibyl's secret haunt. Carved out of the rocky flanks of Cumae lies a vast cave, deep in the gaping jagged rock, a cave pierced by 100 tunnels. At the entrance of the cave, Aeneas waits. The Sibyl calls from within.
No! It's the time to ask your fate to speak.
The Sibyl emerges. All of a sudden, all her features, her color changes. Her braided hair flies loose. Her heart bursts with frenzy. She seems to rise in height. The ring of her voice, no longer human, the breath, the power of the god comes closer, closer.
Why so slow, Aeneas? So slow to pray, to swear your vows, to offer your oxen, to light the fire. Not until you do will the jaws of our spellbound house gape wide.
An icy shiver runs through the Trojan's spine. He kneels, prays, lights the fire, hurries to carry out the Sybil's orders. The Sybil draws closer, steadies four black-backed calves, tips wine on their brows, plucks tufts from the crown between their horns, and casts them over the altar fire. First offerings, crying out,
"To Hecate, Queen of Heaven and Hell."
She runs knives under throats, catches warm blood in bowls. Aeneas himself, sword drawn, slaughters a black fleeced lamb to the Fury's mother, Night, and to her great sister, Earth, and to you, Proserpina, kills a barren heifer. Then, to the king of the river Styx, he raises altars into the dark night, and over their fires lays whole carcasses of bulls, and pours fat oil over their entrails.
They say that the gates of the underworld are here. Teach me the way. Allow me to go and see my beloved father. Let me meet him face to face.
The earth groans, and the wooden heights quake, and across the gloom, the hounds howl as the goddess comes closer.
Wars. Horrendous wars, and the Tiber foaming with tides of blood. I see it all. Tear your sword from its sheath, Aeneas. Now is the time for courage. Now for the steady heart.
And into the yawning cave she flings herself, possessed. And Aeneas follows. You gods, who govern the realm of ghosts, you voiceless shades and chaos, you, the river of fire, you far-flung regions hushed in the night, lend me the right to tell what I have heard. Lend your power to reveal the world immersed in the misty depths of the earth. On they go, dim travellers under the lonely night. On through the gloom, the empty halls of death's ghostly realm. And there in the entryway, the gorge of hell itself, where grief and the pangs of conscience make their beds, and fatal pale disease lives, and bleak old age, dread and hunger, seductress to crime, and grinding poverty, and deadly struggle, and death, and twisted, wicked joys. And facing them at the threshold, war, rife with death, and the Fury's iron chambers, and mad, raging strife, whose blood-stained headbands knot her snaky locks. There, in the midst, a giant shadowy elm tree spreads her ancient branching arms, home, they say, to swarms of false dreams, one clinging tight under each leaf. And a throng of monsters, too. What brutal forms. Centaurs. Hybrid scylas, part women, part beasts, and the savage-headed Hydra, hissing horror. Gorgons, harpies, and triple-bodied Geryon. Aeneas grips his sword in terror.
Don't look them in the eye, Aeneas. Look away. Walk quickly past. They are flimsy will-o'-the-wisps, phantoms, and thin air. This way, I can hear the whirlpools roar.
And here, in the wailing river, Charon, the ferryman, eyes in fixed fiery stare, and grimy rags hanging down, punts his red skiff, carrying souls across Acheron. A huge throng of the dead comes streaming towards the bank as he nears.
They are the helpless, the unburied. The ferrymen cannot take them across. No spirits can cross the roaring river until their bones are buried and they rest in peace.
And us? Will he let us cross?
I will deal with the ferryman, Aeneas.
Not one more step, whoever you are. This is the world of shadows. The realm of night. I can tell you, I have little truck with heroes, if that's what you are. When Hercules came, I sailed him over, and he stole our watchdog. Others tried to snatch our queen, Proserpina, from her bed. What do you want here?
There is no treachery, ferryman, not here with this Trojan son. Be calm. Your dog is safe, as is your queen. Aeneas, a remnant from Troy, goes down to deepest hell to speak with his father's shade.
What's that to me?
Give me the bow, Aeneas. This is what it is to you.
She holds up Proserpina's gift, the golden bow. At this, Charon stills his boat. The heaving rage subsides in his chest as he marvels at the fateful branch, unseen so many years, luminous gold in the colorless place. He clears the boat, makes way for Aeneas and the Sibyl, takes them swiftly from shore to shore, over the thick black water, delivering them to triple-headed Cerberus's watch.
Is that your trembling beast, ferryman? Here's a honey sop for his temper.
A sop soaked in drugged seed. The dog, three jaws spread wide, snatches, eats, sprawls, snorts, and soon sleeps. Aeneas seizes the way in. At that moment, they hear them. Ghosts of infants, weeping, robbed of their share of sweet life, all snatched from the breast, swept off and drowned in bitter death. And close to the spot, extending to the horizon, the fields of mourning.
So many souls. Who are they?
They died of love. The harsh, wasting sickness of cruel love. And those in the grisly swamp there, they brought death by their own hands. Its loveless, lethal waters bind them fast.
And there, wandering amongst them, her wound still fresh,
Dido. Oh dear God. Was it I that did this? Dido. Dido, come closer. Stay a while. Please speak to me. Don't go. Dido, I beg you. I beg you, dear love. Dido! Dido!
But Dido, eyes fixed to the ground, turns away, fleeing back to the shadowed forests where Sichaeus, her true husband, answers her anguish, meets her love with love.
Night comes on, Aeneas. We waste our time with tears.
They go on. Towards the wall of fire, Tartarus itself, a blazing flood of lava and whirling boulders thundering around a fortress. And from within, the groans and cries of the terrified, desperate, condemned.
Do not pity these souls, Aeneas. Here, Cretan Rhadamanthus rules with an iron hand,
censuring men, exposing fraud, forcing confessions when anyone up above, reveling in his crimes, puts off his day of atonement till he dies. The fool. Too late. That very moment, Aeneas, on that hour, vengeful Tisiphone, armed with lashes, springs on the guilty, whips them till they quail, summoning up her savage sisters, the bands of Furies. And there, through the gates, can you see the sentry crouched at the threshold? Fiercer still, the monstrous Hydra, 50 black mouths gaping. And beyond, the abyss, Tartarus itself plunging headlong down through infinite darkness. Here some tortured souls push giant boulders. Others dangle, racked at breaking point on spokes of rolling wheels. Here Phlegias, in agony, shouts out his warning.
Never scorn the gods! Ah! Bow to justice! You are forewarned! Ah!
And here, those who hated their brothers while alive, or struck their fathers down, or killed for adultery, or bartered their native land for jewels and saddled her with a tyrant, and set up laws for another bribe.
Help me. Help me, please. I meant no wrong.
This one forced himself on his daughter's bed.
I meant no wrong.
Sealed an unholy marriage.
Please.
All dared and did outrageous crimes. But come, press on. See it through. Do not let their agonies divert you. Be strong, Aeneas, certain of your good. Complete this duty.
She leads him to a silver-lit gate along a shadowed path. Aeneas springs to the entryway, and here, in the goddess's grove, takes Proserpina's golden bough, places it in the goddess's hand, then bows and kneels at her feet.
Aeneas, Trojan captain, here is the way to Elysium, the land of joy, where the blessed make their homes. Here, a dazzling radiance clothes the fields, and the spirits possess their own sun, their own stars. Here, mourned in the world above, and fallen dead in battle, are the sons of Dardanus. There, devout Aeneas, there, go through.
Aeneas! Aeneas! Come to me, Aeneas!
Do you not see your father?
Aeneas!
He is calling to you.
Aeneas runs across sweeping fields, through the soft grass and gentle breeze, arms outstretched towards his father.
Let me embrace you. Don't recoil from me.
You cannot hold me, Aeneas. Stand away. You cannot feel your arms about me. I am thin air, a whisper of the self.
Your ghost, your grieving ghost, so often it came to me. Let me hold you, father.
So Aeneas pleaded, his face streaming with tears. Three times he tried to fling his arms around his father's neck. Three times he embraced nothing. The phantom sifting through his fingers, light as wind, quick as a dream in flight.
I am a mere shadow, my son.
Father.
A specter of what Anchises once was. You cannot hold me now. But I can tell you, talk to you, show you all of what is to come. All of what is to be, or will be, can be, by your willing deed.
Anchises guides his son into the valley's green depths, to a sheltered grove and rustling wooded brakes, the river Lethe flowing past the homes of peace. Around it hovered numberless races, nations of souls. Like bees in meadowlands on a cloudless summer day that settle in flowers, riots of colour, swarming around the lily's lustrous sheen, and the whole field comes alive with a humming murmur.
Who are those armies of souls gathered at the water's edge?
They are the spirits owed a second body by the Fates. They drink deep of Lethe's currents, long draughts that will set them free of cares.
And this is what they wait for? This is where life begins?
The seeds of life are in the sky and the earth, the flowing fields of the sea, and the shining orb of the moon. An inner spirit feeds them, coursing through their limbs. Mind stirs the mass, and their fusion brings the world into birth. That is where life resides, Aeneas. But as we live, we are weighed down by the body's ills, or dulled by earthly limbs and flesh that's born for death. That is the source of all men's fears and longings, his joys and his sorrows. Nor can they see the heaven's light, shut up in the body's tomb, a prison dark and deep.
And why is there such agony, Father, in this dreadful place?
Because we waste away our lives on cunning and deceit, always forgetting heaven's light. We must pay for all offenses, Aeneas. The suffering you have witnessed is the purge, the rent on living. Some are hung, splayed out. Some plunged in rushing floods, their stains, their crimes scoured off or scorched away by fire. Then, when all their spirits are cleansed, they are sent to Elysium's broad expanse, where we stand now, in open fields of joy. God calls them forth to the river Lethe, which is where they wait, those great armies of souls, their memories blank, so that they may revisit the world and begin once more.
Anchises, silent for a moment, drawing his son and the Sibyl with him into the midst of the murmuring throng, took his stand on a rise of ground where he could scan the long column marching towards him.
Come, sons of Troy, walk through time, bright souls, future heirs of our name, of our renown. You see that youth in his, leaning on the tipless spear. He is your son to be, your last born, a king who fathers kings. And there Aeneas, a son of Mars, through our lineage born, Romulus, founder of Rome. This brilliant Rome, whose empire marches across the world, blessed in her breed of men. And here is Caesar, and all the line of your firstborn, Ascanius, our blood. Caesar Augustus, son of God, who returns to us a golden age. A second Troy.
Anchises leads his son through each new scene and fires his soul with a love of glory still to come, the future visited in the half-light. Here, at journey's end, Anchises guides his son and the Sibyl towards twin gates. One made of horn, which offers easy passage, and one of ivory, radiant and flawless, where the dead send false dreams up towards the sky. They say a gentle, tender goodbye. They will be together again. Then, Aeneas and the Sibyl walk through the ivory gate and into the light. Awaking on the Cumaean shore, Aeneas wastes no time. He prepares. He makes ready. He calls to his men. All is to be gained. He sets sail for Latium.
Oh! Oh, keep still.
What is it, Al? Have you got it all?
How did you do it?
I don't know.
What will Turner say?
Oh, is it very bad?
Oh, it's only singed. Now, keep still. Were you standing too close to the candles?
No!
Oh, your beautiful hair.
What has she done?
She's burnt her hair.
How did she do that?
She was by the altar offering prayers too near to the candles.
I was standing away from the flame, Father. I was.
And who were you offering to?
To Electo.
So the Furies, why?
I don't know why. She came to me. I thought of her. I don't know why. And suddenly my hair was alight.
Well, offering to Venus would have been safer. I was saying, I don't know what Turnus will say to having a betrothed with burnt hair.
I must ask Faunus.
Faunus? Why?
Such things have meaning, Amata. Such things tell us, warn us of the path ahead.
It's an accident, I think, Latinus. Nothing more.
Not if she was standing away.
I was standing away, Mother.
Bring him.
Oh, this is fuss, Latinus.
Bring him. Now.
And Faunus, the great seer, is called and sits at the feet of Latinus, king of Latium, and Queen Amata, his wife. He offers prayers and listens to their daughter, Lavinia, studies her black and singed hair. And in a seer's trance, he tells them,
never marry Lavinia to a Latin.
But she's already betrothed.
Hush, Amata.
Put no trust in marriage ready-made.
But she's promised to Turnus.
Be quiet.
Strangers will come. And their lifeblood will lift our name to the stars.
No. No! She's to marry Turnus. You cannot listen, Latinus. You cannot let this be. Please!
Let me think.
I thought it was agreed, Father. Father!
News of a foreign army landing on their shores reaches Latinus's court. Are these the men foretold by fate? But merciless Juno, winging back from afar, holding course through the heavens, sees the boats upon the shore.
Why couldn't they die on the plains of Troy? Why couldn't they stay defeated in their defeat? Why couldn't the fires of Troy cremate the Trojans? No. Through the shocks of war, through walls of fire, Aeneas still thrives.
That said, the vengeful goddess swoops down to earth and stirs Alecto, mother of all sorrows, from her den, where nightmare furies lurk in hellish darkness.
Come, monster, shift your forms, your shape so fierce. Don't let my honor, my fame be torn from its high place, or the Trojans bring Latinus round with lures of marriage. Alecto, queen of all the Furies, who can make brothers bound by love gear up to mutual slaughter, demolish a house with hatred. Do me this service, virgin daughter of the night.
Bloated with Gorgon venom, Alecto launches out, first to Latium and Amata's side. She flings a snake from her long black hair, thrusts it down her breast and into the very heart of the queen. The viper glides between her robes, her smooth breasts, breathes Amata into a frenzy, its clammy poison stealing into her very blood. And she runs screaming, threatening her husband.
Latinus! Listen to my words! She has promised to Turnus! She's already promised to her kinsman! I will not allow it, Latinus! Latinus!
And that complete, Alecto shapeshifts into Calibi, Turnus's ancient seer, goes to Turnus, Lavinia's betrothed.
Turnus, do you not know? Have you not heard? Lavinia's hand is offered elsewhere.
to the Trojan captain Aeneas. Does no one say? Did no one tell?
And proud Turnus roars, blazing. Frenzied, he shouts for armor, cries for war. A river boils inside him, bubbling up a spume.
Listen! The Trojans plan to take my queen, our land, this treasured place of ours. Get ready for war! Hurl the enemy from our borders!
He fills his Rutulian troops with headlong daring and hoists a banner of war. Piercing trumpets fill the realm, all of Latium stirred in frenzy, Alecto's work complete. And what of Aeneas? He's exploring this new horizon up some unknown river that flows into the sea with a small band of followers. The trumpets do not reach him.
Aeneas! Aeneas, quickly!
And he, startled, sees his mother standing on the deck. Iridescent, vivid, Venus in all her grandeur.
King Turnus of Rutulian blood prepares to fight wars against your race. My son, find allies. Quickly, follow the river. Take your boat. Sail its course. Go to the court of Evander. Ask for his aid. They wage an endless war against the Latin people. Seek them as allies. Seal that pact. Follow the river, Aeneas. Follow the Tiber's flow.
Aeneas follows the Tiber as Venus commanded, nearing a fortress, a humble kingdom, a city small. A youth stands before them across the water.
Soldiers, who are you? Do you bring peace or war?
We're Trojan born. Put down your spear. We are exiles, driven here by Latins, our mutual foe. We look for King Evander.
What do you want of him?
Tell him this. Leading chiefs of Dardania come, survivors of Troy, pressing to be his friends in arms.
Come on to dry land, famous sons of Dardanus, and speak to my father, King Evander.
Aeneas's fame goes before him. No sooner knelt before King Evander than held and hugged and kissed.
You're most welcome, Captain Aeneas, a guest of our house. We're long-held friends, both Trojan and Arcadian brothers. Turnus, we have feared for many years, a hothead, belligerent and insolent, well known for his attempts on our territory. And if you say a war is coming, then we will gladly join you in battle to bring the Latins down at last. But first, we must sit and praise and honor so that our fight is blessed.
The guests are seated and fed. Offerings are made to the immortal gods. Gifts from Ceres, wheated loaves just baked. And in Bacchus's name, they keep the wine cups flowing. Feast on long-backed oxen.
Please, father, no harm will come to me.
No, Pallas.
I beg you.
You are too young to go, too young to fight. My son begs to go with you, Aeneas.
Let this be my first war, a war against Turnus and the Latins. Father, he taunted us for so long. Let it be this battle.
Can you guard him, Aeneas? Return him to my side.
There is no true safety in battle. It is a place where chaos and anarchy rule.
See, Pallas, listen to this wise man's words.
Father, how can I serve you well, lead your kingdom if I have not protected her, fought for her? I am of age. Let me be worthy of your name, of the name of king.
Very well. you must, do me proud.
I will, Father. I will.
Aeneas, guard him. Guard my son.
It is agreed. Evander lends Aeneas his treasured son. But there, on the headland, Turnus is galloping wildly back and forth, looking for a way to attack. He scans the Trojan camp and the armada riding at anchor. He flares in anger, resentment searing him to the bone.
Bring up fire! Burn the fleet! Burn them!
Whole battalions equip themselves with blazing torches, a swirl of sparks and ash.
The ships! Our ships are on fire!
Run! Fetch water! Anything!
Save our fleet!
Rhea, mother of all gods, mother to Jove himself, comes crying to Jove's door.
I had a grove on a mountain crest, a pine wood, dark with pitch pine, shady with maple timber. These woods I gladly gave to the Trojans to make their fleet. But now, my son, ruler of Olympus, these galleys are burning.
What would you have me do, mother? What privilege do you beg for your ships? Should Aeneas go through scathing dangers unscathed?
I only ask for the grove so dear, the pitched pine and maple, so sacred.
I cannot return the fleet, but their mortal shape I will unhinge.
First, a radiant flash, then a cloud. Suddenly, all the vessels, snapping their cables free of the bank, dive like dolphins, plunging headlong beaks into the bottom's depths, then up they surface. Each a sea nymph swimming out to sea. The Rutulians shrink in panic. Undaunted, Turnus flares up once more.
Don't you see this good omen? Jove himself has whisked away the Trojan fleet. They have no ships. This Trojan race will end. Let us prepare for Aeneas' return.
Aeneas, with Pallas at his side, rests on Tiber's bank, deep in slumber.
Aeneas, son of Venus, awake. Aeneas. Aeneas.
Startled, Aeneas stirs, and from the river, the sea nymph Cymodice calls.
Here I am. In the Tiber's flow, I was your ship, made from sacred pine, one of your fleet, Aeneas. Traitorous Turnus burnt us, and our great mother, Rhea, changed our shape. Turnus surrounds your camp. Turnus set on seizing all. Your men need you. Return to lead them now.
And she closes with a dive, plunging back into the river.
Come, Pallas. It's time to fight.
Aeneas takes a sheaf of weapons. He won't miss a single man. He seizes a heavy lance and swings through a Rutulian. All run to hold and harm their enemy. But who can halt Aeneas? Not a chance of that. Some are choked by burly spear, some cut down, some sliced and wounded. All sides suffer in the bloody chaos. War's black mouth blood-filled, frenzied, hate. Comrades fall as friends cry death, brothers die. And Pallas dives and lunges, killing quickly, defiantly, drumming the fields of Italy with his heels. Turnus sees him, knows him well, Evander's son and heir. He shouts to his men,
"I'll go after Pallas! Pallas is my prize alone!"
At this, his comrades clear the field, and Pallas, his manly growth so new, struck dumb, runs his eyes over Turnus's vast frame.
"Now's my time to win some glory, for stripping off a wealth of spoils, or dying a noble death. Know this, Turnus, my father can stand either fate."
Pallas marches out to open field. Down from his chariot, Turnus vaults. Pallas throws his spear, full force. It flies through the air and hits the armor high up, where the bronze rims the shoulder's edge. But it only scrapes the skin of Turnus's massive body and glances off. Turnus balances his long oakwood spear with its iron tip and cries,
"Now we'll see if my spear pierces deeper!"
Turnus's spear goes shattering through iron, bronze, layers of oxhide, with stabbing impact, piercing breastplates, guard, and Pallas's chest. Pallas wrenches the spearhead, warm from his wound. No use. His blood and his life breath follow hard on the same track out. Turnus trumpets over him.
"Take a message home to Evander. Tell him this. The palace I send him back will serve him right for making pacts with Trojans."
And with that, he stamps his left foot on the corpse and strips away Pallas's sword belt. Pallas's own, his father's father's, proudly worn heritage. And now, Turnus's own. Such a heavy blow. News of tragic death reaches Aeneas on rumor's wings. Aeneas, noble captain, elsewhere on the battlefield, blazing with rage, he searches out proud Turnus for bloody revenge. And so once more it begins. The ranks storm forward, and deaths of fathers, sons, brothers, lovers. With a blow to the head, a plunge into a throbbing heart, all hell breaks loose. All on attack. No rest, no let-up, total war. The Trojans break through, march on Latinus's walls. Queen Amata looks out from her fortress and sees the Trojans approaching, and not a Rutulian in sight.
"Was it me? Was it me that started this war? Is Turnus dead? Is that why no one is here to defend us? Am I the criminal? The cause of war?"
Amata, queen of Latium, mother of Lavinia, wife to King Latinus, in a frenzied grip of sorrow, lost, alone and guilty, victim of cruelest gods, ties a noose, hangs it high, and takes the life from her. The queen's daughter is the first to see. Lavinia howls from the fortress all the way to the god's own house, in a grief that rocks the walls. And finally, Jove, the king of mighty Olympus, of all the world, turns to his wife, fierce Juno.
Where will it end, my queen? What is left at the last? You have ignited an unspeakable war, degraded a royal house, and blessed the wedding hymn with the dirge of grief. But go no further. I forbid you now, my wife and queen.
This I beg, Valatium. Never command the Latins to change their name. No Trojans here. Let Latium on her native soil endure. Let Roman stock grow strong, mixed with Italian blood. Troy has fallen, fallen, let her stay.
Come, my love, relax your anger. I surrender to your wish. They'll speak the Latin tongue. The Trojan name will end, and you will see them outstrip all men. No nation will match the honors that will shower down.
Juno nods in acceptance. And Jove sends a sign. Alecto, daughter of the night. Alecto speeds to earth, shrinks into a small bird. She flutters past Turnus's face, over and over, screeching, drumming his shield with whirring wings. His hackles bristle in horror. His voice is choked in dread, and Aeneas sees his prey.
Still in retreat, Turnus! Still bent on more delay?
No more words. Glancing around, Turnus spots a huge rock, enormous, ages old, placed once as a boundary stone to settle border wars. A dozen men could barely shoulder it, but he wrenches it up, hands trembling, tries to heave it at Aeneas, but his knees buckle. Blood like ice in his veins. Just as in dreams, when the mighty spell of sleep falls heavy on our eyes, and in the midst of one last burst of speed we sink, our tongue won't work, our body fails. So with Turnus. And as he hangs back, the fateful spear of Aeneas flies on with its weight of iron death. It pierces Turnus's breastplate, strikes home. The blow drops him to the ground. He lies at Aeneas's feet.
I deserve it all. No mercy, please. If you care for a parent's grief, pity my own, and send me back alive. I stretch my hands to you so the men of Latium can see my defeat. Lavinia is your bride.
Aeneas shifted his gaze, stood there still, and held his sword arm back. Then all at once, he caught sight of the fateful belt of Pallas, Evander's son and heir, whom Turnus had overpowered and snatched a trophy of war, unwarranted, and gloated over from the noble young. And Aeneas, as soon as his eyes drank in that plunder, a keepsake of his own savage grief, he cries for Pallas.
Decked in the spoils you stripped from one I loved, escape my clutches? Never. I will make you pay the price with your own guilty blood.
And in the same breath, blazing with wrath, he plants his iron sword hilt deep in his enemy's heart. Turnus's limbs go limp in the chill of death, and with a groan, his life breath flees down, down to the shades below. Of wars and a man I sing, an exile driven on by fate. He was the first to flee the coast of Troy. Yet many blows took on land and sea from the gods above, thanks to cruel Juno's relentless rage, and many losses he bore in battle too, before he could found a city, bring his gods to Latium, source of the Latin race, the Alban lords, and the high walls of Rome.
In episode 2, Aeneas was played by Richard Harrington, Anchises by Robert Pugh, the Sibyl by Fiona Shaw, Achates by Matthew Gravel, Turnus by Ben Crow, Amata by Aerie Thomas, Jove by Michael Burtonshaw, Juno by Rachel Atkins, Venus by Annette Badland, Lavinia by Aisha Antoine, and Pallas by Arthur Hughes. The storyteller was Daniel Morden. The music was composed by Will Gregory, arranged by Ian Gardiner, and performed by the BBC Singers, conducted by Matthew Hamilton, with soloist Cherith Milburn Fryer. Percussion was by Joby Burgess. Virgil's Aeneid was adapted by Hattie Naylor from the translation by Robert Fagles, and was a BBC Cymru Wales production, produced and directed by Kate McCall.
Our new classic serial starting next week is a dramatisation of Alan Sillitoe's seething novel set in 1958 Nottingham, part of Radio 4's celebration of British New Wave film and cinema. Saturday night and Sunday morning starts next Sunday afternoon at 3. We're back to this Sunday. After the news, Mariella Frostrup takes a tour of Belfast with local novelist Glenn Patterson. That's in a couple of minutes. And then at 4:30 we put the poetry of California and Los Angeles under the spotlight.
It's nearly time for more Fry's English Delight with me, Stephen Fry.
There's no need whatsoever for the I in friend, which breaks the pattern of end and send and bend.
The series that takes delight in our language.
He describes sound as feelings and touchings in and of the mouth.
Should have a single letter all its own, shouldn't need two letters. Used to have its own letter, useful letter, called thorn. Got thrown away. Why?
Fry's English Delight on BBC Radio 4. Tomorrow morning at 9.